Nazar, we'd like to ask you to stay with us for just 10 minutes for a post-show interview. We'll post it online under web exclusives at democracynow.org. We want to ask you about the refugee Shabbats and other activities of your group. Melanie Nazar is Senior Vice President for the Public Affairs Group, HIAS. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show discusses the climate of fear as we approach the midterm elections, and they take your calls.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Here to Stay, an artist book fair the weekend of November 2nd through 4th at Matter in Portland. Here to Stay is a celebration of publication as art. The opening will be Friday from 5 to 9, and weekend events include tea tasting, book fair, art exhibition, and more. Participants include Just Seeds Artist Cooperative, Signal Fire, Eberhardt Press, Works Progress Agency, and many other artists, writers, and activists. Again, that's Here to Stay, an artist book fair the weekend of November 2nd through 4th at Matter, 811 East Burnside Street, number 124 in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Ever wonder what happens to your Fred Meyer reward points? Now you can turn them into excellent community radio by linking your Fred Meyer rewards card to KBOO. Look up KBOO or our ID number 86634 at fredmeyer.com/community rewards. Every time you use your card, KBOO will get money. Your rebates, discounts, and gas bonuses are unaffected. With your Fred Meyer reward card, you can even turn cat litter into support for KBOO. Go to fredmeyer.com/community rewards, all one word, and link your card to KBOO.
Meow.
Well, it's not. It's not coming through the air. It's not at all certain that it'll survive.
It might be departing.
I mean,
the air.
This is. We better take this really, really seriously.
Agreed. Let's stipulate one thing at the top of the show here.
Yeah.
Shall we?
Yeah.
I can't recall a time in my lifetime when things have been this weird politically, this hateful, and this combative.
Nor can I, and I'm a lot older than you.
It's true.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that this is more than creepy. I have a song.
Yeah. Let's just get out of the way. Go do it.
Yeah.
Sing your song, Joe.
You always hate it. I know. I just can't resist it. I went to the animal fair. All the birds and the beasts were there. The big baboon by the light of the moon was combing his auburn hair. Now, here's the deal. In the midst of all this horror, what did the President of the United States in front of a crazy mob say? I was worried about my hair because I was having a bad hair day. That's where his head is at. And I'll leave it at that.
But you're not going to leave it at that.
No, I'm
why,
not.
Why even to tempt people like that?
I mean, it's just, I mean, I. This big baboon is armed and dangerous.
Yeah. And so are the people who support him, and that's what's got me even more worried.
Oh, it's really, really creepy.
All right, so let's just recap this past week of of blood and fire in the United States. Last Wednesday, a white man with a history of violence shot and killed two African-American shoppers in a grocery store.
Yeah, and let's not forget that, because this hate is almost universal.
Yeah, now that's horrible, right? Let's just take that statement in a vacuum. Two black shoppers killed by a angry, racist, armed white man in a grocery store. That's awful.
And trying to get into a church, by the way, so he could have killed more.
That piece of awful news has been subsumed by the complete wave of awful that has followed it. All right, that's how crazy this last week was. All right, so on Friday, a suspect with a criminal record, a known Trump supporter, a MAGA guy, a gun nut, sent pipe bombs to essentially the entire leadership of the Democratic Party, plus CNN, plus a couple of random media figures who have antagonized Trump. Pipe bombs. Now we're going to get to more.
I just want to add that they were fortunately very badly made pipe bombs. Never mind.
They were. Well, we're going to get to that in a little bit because that's important. And finally, over the weekend, an anti-Semite walked into a synagogue in Pittsburgh and opened fire and killed 11 people, screaming, "All Jews must die." This has been a bad week. And I really don't see it getting any better. We've got another week to go till has become almost a cliched phrase, the most consequential midterm election of our lifetimes. I repeat it because I think it's true.
Well, I'm sure it's true. Unfortunately, this is the situation we're in. The stakes are very high, and the stakes are beyond Democrat-Republican nonsense. They're beyond left and right nonsense. They're humanity versus inhumanity. This is what's happened.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We are going to witness in the next week, here's a prediction, we're going to witness fear-mongering on a scale that you haven't seen yet in your life. We may very well yet see more hate crimes, further violence, possibly further deaths carried out at the hands of supporters of the auburn-haired baboon, as you so succinctly called him earlier today. This is real, ladies and gentlemen. This is real. This is the era in which we live. This is where fascism seeps in, when we fail to recognize its early warning signs and take action. And how can you take action, Joe? What's the most important thing?
Vote!
Thank you.
That was easy, but that isn't going to do it alone. That isn't going to do it alone, folks. You got to vote. You got to organize. You got to be aware. You got to be knowledgeable. And you got to participate in society in many levels. But one of the first things and the most important thing right now in this state and everywhere is to make sure you vote.
All right, so to get yourself through the next 7 days, I want you to remember three principles, and this is thanks to Paul Krugman on Twitter. First, there are no limits. Second, there is no bottom. Third, these people lie about everything.
Everything.
So that's something you need to remember.
Yeah.
We have to vote the bastards out. That's the only way we're going to exercise any sort of accountability over this lawless administration.
But it's only the beginning.
This is the only way we're going to begin to arrest the inexorable slide towards fascism that we have witnessed over the past several years. This is the only way. You can call up and tell me I'm wrong. But this is the only way. And that's why this is the most consequential midterm election of our lives.
Well, even here in Oregon, I mean, there's a measure to limit women's reproductive rights. There's all kinds of bad stuff, and ads more vicious than I've ever seen before on television.
Speaking of that, I want to play right now an audio clip. This is a 30-second ad that's sponsored by a group called Future 45. Future 45 is a political action committee, one of the freest spending political action committees out there, and one that has taken the free rein given to it by the Citizens United decision and run. Future 45 is backed. Its largest backer is Sheldon Adelson. You know who he is?
I know he runs gambling in Macau.
In Macau and in Las Vegas and all over the place.
Yeah, he's a big guy. He's a mob connected guy.
I didn't know that about him.
Oh,
he's a mob connected guy.
He's in Vegas.
Well, all right. He's also a big donor to conservative causes. Future 45 was an active political action committee during the 2016 election. He gave to them $25 million. And that's to one committee. So I want to play this ad for you right now that's running all across the country on television and on the internet. It's called Any Democrat. It's about 30 seconds long. Let's hear that, Ray.
The screaming, the violence, the smears, and death threats. The far left moving to socialism, undefended open borders, immediate tax increases, 100% government-run healthcare, the booming economy stopped, Nancy Pelosi back in power, gridlock, and then impeachment. Is that really what you want? Voting for any Democrat gets you all of that. Future 45 is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Well, this is the same ad with visuals that I saw on television. Regular television.
Well, I would hope it had visuals on television.
Well, yeah, it would.
Yeah, that's the same ad.
It's the same ad. It's horrendous. It's a horrendous piece of really direct, nasty propaganda.
Yeah, the imagery is... I really suggest you can Google it. Any Democrat will and you'll pull it up. It's on YouTube. You can watch it anytime you want. Some of the captions that appeared on the screen that you couldn't see, obviously, just now, were words like screaming, violence, death threats, socialism, 100% government-run health care. And this is like waving a red flag before a conservative bull, is what this is. This is incitement. I don't recall ever seeing anything like this quite in tone or in content, Joe. Can you?
No, I and this may be a bit of my ignorance, but I don't. I don't remember in the time of Goldwater, who was pretty weird, or anyone else ever having put out ads as vicious and lying and cruel as this thing.
Well, that might be because there hasn't been another point in history where we were so close to tipping over the edge into permanent one-party rule. We flirted with it under the Bush administration. But I don't think we've ever been this close before.
No, nor have we had leadership that is so... Well, I'm going to call him from now on the big baboon.
You can do that.
Well, here he is.
You are still free to do that
the
at
reason
this point
why
in time.
The reason why I recited that silly children's song was because this guy spent much of his time in front of his crowd worrying about his hair on the day when people were being murdered.
Yeah.
I mean, who is this baboon?
He went ahead with a scheduled rally on the day of the massacre.
Yeah, well, of course.
He went ahead with a rally last week when the pipe bombs were sent around.
Of course.
Like Krugman says, there is no bottom here. We have yet to see something that this guy and his supporters won't do or say, up to and including mass murder.
Well, it seems so, yes.
All right. Now, a lot of people have been hesitant to draw this connection. At what point does incitement to violence, like the kind Trump traffics in and has trafficked in since the time he decided to run for president, at what point does the language that he uses, at what point does that cross over into culpability for the actions of his supporters? I would argue that we've already passed that point. I don't know that I would be able to prove that in a court of law. But the fact is that he says these things. He says that the press is the enemy of the people. He says that brown people are streaming over the border to rape and murder you.
And he says among them is a bunch of followers of radical Islam.
Yeah, well, and we'll get there. We'll get there. He has proclaimed members of a major world faith persona non grata in the United States of America. And on and on and on. And he says these things all the time. He has praised people in his rallies for roughing up hecklers. He has suggested that perhaps the best thing to do with his political opponents is to imprison them. He has suggested that the best thing to do with reporters who criticize him is to get them off the air or off the page or put them in jail as well.
Or knock them down.
So it begs the question, how much of this before he crosses the line into culpability? I think we're there. Just look at the events of the past week that we recapped at the top of the show.
Let's go back. Let's go back in time to the horror in Charlottesville, where a mob, this is the only mob there has been, by the way. There's no mob of left-wingers or something. It's not. These are people protesting, women crying out for their rights and so on. Those are not mobs. Anyway, he says, here they are. They're marching with their torches, their tiki torches. No Jews can replace us.
Yeah.
And it's really, really clear. It's really clear. And he said of that event, well, there were good people on both sides. The hell there were.
Yeah, the hell there were. You know, and that's that seems like the distant past at this point. But that was just last year. And let's not forget that one of those mobsters, that's not exactly the right word, members of the mob.
Yes.
Drove a car through a group of counter protesters and killed a woman.
Yeah.
Nice people on both sides.
Yeah, yeah.
All the president had to do at that moment in time was come out and say Nazis are bad.
You'd think.
But he was unable to do that.
Well, I don't think he thinks. I actually don't think he thinks right-wing fascism is a bad thing at all.
I would agree with that. And as Maya Angelou says, when someone shows you who they are, believe them.
Yeah.
This man is a fascist. This man, I think, would gladly see us round the corner from representative democracy to one-party totalitarian rule.
Right.
And that is not hyperbole.
I'm afraid it's not. I mean, this has exceeded even my worst fears. And as you know, I've been scared about this for quite a while.
Yeah, you have. Let's go to the phones. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. If you'd like to comment online, you can do that at facebook.com/AbeAndJoe or on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Let's go to the phones. Sean, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Agitated, Sean. How are you?
I'm just depressed, man.
I would totally agree. And I would say that definitely down in Argentina, the CIA is definitely involved in that as well, as they've been so long involved down in South and...
Do you mean Brazil?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, Brazil. Yes, absolutely. I have no doubt about it, especially when you consider that Lula, until he was thrown into prison and Rouff impeached and so forth, you know, he was fully leading in the polls of the presidential, and then all of a sudden it swings to the far right and the guy wins. But that's not my main reason for calling. My quick point that I want to make is that, are you guys familiar with that, ironically, Trump just designated the Civil War monument?
No.
Okay, so he just recently designated, and I think even expanded, and I'm not clear exactly where it is. I just happened to hear it the other day. But it stopped me in my tracks when I heard it, when you consider, of course, he fought against public lands and cut back bears' ears and so forth and so on. But the one that he didn't hesitate to want to acknowledge and expand was a Civil War monument. And Zinke, Department of the Interior, came out and said that the reason they did it was the hope that it would bring the American people together. Hmm. Now, from my understanding, and when you think about it, there is a very, very dangerous, unconscious, coded message in that very act of what they did and by saying that. Because when you think about what that monument symbolizes, it symbolizes what? It symbolizes the war over slavery and people of color and this whole issue of immigrants, and everybody is bad unless you're a white Christian male in the world.
Well, not just a white Christian male, a white Protestant Christian
just
male.
Just whatever, but when you look at the coded message in it, what does it say? We want to bring the people together. Of course, they always want nationalism by bringing war into the issue to bring people together. But if you think about it, the war was all about division, which is the very thing that they're creating, which is also what they want to bring people together, is creating division, bringing people together through hate in order to create control through the chaos.
And then so, blame the news media for divisiveness.
You know, it may seem very convoluted, but that's the whole premise of the psychology of what their fascism is all about. So it was just, once I really thought about it, it's just so easy to see the very unconscious message that they're sending is bringing people together by the one monument they want to acknowledge, and that's a monument not only just about war, but the Civil War, which is the very thing that they want to create right now.
Well, there were good people on both sides.
Have a great day, you guys.
Okay.
Hey, thank you for the call.
Yeah, I want to mention one other thing. There is this thing going on, a false equivalence being preached by the Republicans, and this is really important. Many of the ads, many of the comments talk about how the attack on the baseball game mm-hmm. in D.C., was some kind of democratic thing, and then making that equal at the ball game, then making that equal to the nationalist attacks that Trump supports.
Oh, okay. So they're saying that, yeah, okay, Trump may have incited all this violence, but hey, the Democrats incited that attack on the ball game?
Which is, right. There's nothing that...
Right, except you can't point to a single incident of incitement, can you?
No.
There's nothing there. There's no there. You're right. You're very astute to point that out. False equivalence is a huge problem in our political narrative. It has been for a long, long time.
And there's been 16 million anti-Semitic tweets in recent time. 16 million.
Yes, and close to a 60% increase from last year to this in acts of anti-Semitic violence. And this is in addition, of course, to the ongoing wave of violence against African Americans at the hands of law enforcement. These are not normal times, Joe.
No.
I don't even know if there's any, if there was any such thing as normal times.
Well, there have been, we generally roll from crisis to crisis.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
But the fact of the matter is that what we have done by allowing this man to become president of the United States, and remember, he lost by 3 million votes in the popular election, And this is Trump. And mm-hmm. in fact, we need major changes in the Constitution. We got to get rid of the Electoral College. It's nonsense. It's part of a process which began when the country was created not to have a democracy, but to have a republic. And the difference is really obvious now.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We are a 21st century nation running on 18th century software.
Really? That's a good point.
Let's go to the phones. George, good morning.
Good morning, and thanks, guys, for bringing a lot of the main points into focus. But there is one main point that has not been mentioned, but it is something that goes on generation after generation, century after century, and that is a system of political, cultural, social economy called capital or capitalism, and it's increasing the burdens of survival and well-being on all kinds of, well, you might say everyone in the country. And some people don't think of it with the kind of background that, well, isn't there, because the availability of an explanation that says, well, this is something that capitalism has done to societies and to ours, and it's getting worse, and there's going to be more and more people mad as hell, but they don't know enough to say, let's take a look at this system. And there are so many books out there written, well, many of them in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and I have a few where leading academics from different fields came together and said, let's talk about what this system does to us. And from what I see now, I say it puts everybody through horrific stresses, and there are people who do not have the background to understand what's happening, and it's very easy for them to become enraged and go ballistic and do the kind of things that I think his name is Bowers did to that poor and suffering congregation.
Yeah, Bowers.
Yeah. So I would urge readers to look into the literature. Some of it, the best of it, well, I don't know what the best of it is today, but I'd say look into the literature over the last century, and especially over the last few years and decades, written by convinced followers, or, well, I don't know, followers, convinced believers that capitalism is a problem. And take a look at the god-awful stuff it's doing to the countries in Central America and all over the Latin America and all over the world, which produces people who are scared and frightened because their country can't support them. They flee here. It's not their fault. But unless we can do something to slow down this steamroller of capital and what it does to destroying the security and well-being of people, not only here but abroad, we're going to have refugees coming in, and we're going to have people who don't understand it, and they're going to go crazy. I'd be interested in your comments, but I just like to listen to the program. I love this program, so I'll just leave you guys, and then I'll go and turn the radio on and listen.
Good idea. Thank you very much for calling.
He mentioned the corrosive effects of capitalism on the ties that bind a society together. And I really can't refute any of that.
Well, and there's another thing happening, which we all need to understand. The onrushing fact of climate change, the indisputable fact of climate change, the melting of the North and South Poles, the rising seas, the incredible weather that we've experienced, all of that is not something that just magically occurred. There's a causal relationship between carbon in the air and many other things that are being done in the interest of profit-making, short-term profit-making, I might add. The only system that I can imagine that would possibly be accomplished in America would be some kind of version of social democracy. That's a system that has capitalism. It allows the entrepreneur to make money, but sets limits on entrepreneurial money, and has a great system of transfer payments to guarantee health care, guarantee climate change fighting, and so on. But we don't have anything like that in this country, and in Europe, that is in trouble as well.
It's capitalism in a muzzle.
Well, muzzle or controlled, yeah.
Straight jacket.
I don't call it.
Okay. I'm even looking for metaphors.
I wouldn't even go that far.
Searching for metaphors with Abe and Joe. That's absolutely right. I can't refute any of that. But the problem is, when you start talking about things like social democracy, as Bernie Sanders did quite effectively in his presidential campaign, the inevitable response, as we heard in the commercial clip we played earlier in the show, is screams of socialism.
Communism.
Because in the minds of the right wing, they make no distinction between the totalitarian socialism or communism of the Soviet era and the social democracy in places like Northern Europe. They
or
make
France.
No distinction. Or, I suspect this is probably closer to the truth, yes, they recognize that distinction, but they refuse to admit it. And they publicly equate totalitarian socialism with the kind of socialism that people like Bernie Sanders are calling for.
Yeah, no, there's no question about this. And in fact, the whole thing is dependent upon, unfortunately, a country where education has become more and more a product creating ignorance. We have a mythic history of America, the one you learned and I learned probably in the eighth grade. Mm-hmm. You know, it was bull. It was bull then, and it's bull now. And they're still teaching the same nonsense.
Yeah, I think I must have gotten a little less nonsense than you.
Well,
or maybe
possibly.
I had some more clear-eyed teachers when I was growing up.
Well, it's possible. I went to school in Southern California.
It's because we got a fair dose of the myth, but we got a fair dose of reality too.
Yeah, and I think that the tendency to have a patriotic view of history is very dangerous in any culture, anywhere.
It is, and especially because one wants to believe good things about one's country, right?
Well, and there are many things about this country that are good.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. So let's talk for a minute about the so-called refugee caravan that the last caller brought up.
Oh, yeah. By all means, let's.
All right. This is a group of a few thousand poor and desperate people who at this moment in time are just crossing in to southern Mexico. They are at least 1,000 miles away from the United States border.
Yeah, but they're well armed with with what?
They're armed with hungry children.
Yes.
And they're armed with not enough food or clothing.
And desperateness.
Yeah, and they're armed with desperation.
Yes.
And they're making their way towards the United States in a large group. The Republicans and President Trump are making this out to be, like some sort of tank division that's poised to burst across the Texas border and start laying waste to American towns. That's how this is being portrayed, such that the president is deploying 5,200 American soldiers to the U.S.-Mexico border to stop this group of poor, desperate people who are seeking asylum in the United States.
Which, by the way, under the Posse Comitatus Act, cannot carry arms against the citizens.
Indeed. This is an illegal act, and I'm very glad that you brought that up. But this is the kind of fear-mongering I'm talking about. Is it a coincidence that this narrative is emerging or calcifying a week out from an election? No, it's not a coincidence.
And I want to point out one thing that's really important. The reason why these Central Americans are marching in desperation toward the American border is that the United States, throughout the recent past, going way back to the turn of the century of 1910 or so, those countries were taken over or dominated by the banana companies, by American corporations, and in fact, governments, when they aroused that were democratic, were smashed deliberately. And we saw that in Nicaragua, we saw that in El Salvador, we saw it in Honduras, we saw it in so many places. And it's like that history doesn't even exist.
No, this is all happening in a vacuum. It's being painted as an invasion. These aren't refugees, this is an invasion, I've heard plastered over social media from the right wing. The reason that so many people gather together in a group like this, and this happens virtually every year. There's also another thing. This is being painted as if this is unprecedented. No, this happens a lot. And why do refugees and people seeking asylum, why do they group together to travel? Because there's safety in numbers. That journey from deep in Central America through the rest of Central America, through Mexico to the American border, is fraught with all sorts of danger.
Absolutely, and it's important to understand that what is the gang?
M13? I don't know. MS-13, M13. Yeah, right.
Whatever it is, that gang originated in Southern California in El Salvadorian group, and it was exported when we kicked those people out of the country into Central America, and now is a dominant terrorist force in that region, an extortionist force.
Yeah, and I feel we must reiterate, even though we've said this many, many times on this program, It is not a crime to seek asylum. It is not a crime to present oneself at a border and ask for asylum. This happens all the time. And in fact, being in the United States without documentation is not a crime. It is a civil offense. No person is illegal. No one can be here illegally. You can be here without documentation, but you're not breaking the law by doing so.
I think it's really important to understand that the dehumanization of the other is part of the dominant narrative of fascism, as in the case of Nazi Germany and Italy and so on. But beyond all that, the leadership that we have now is so opportunistic and so engaged in trivialisms. The reason why I wanted to sing that baboon song, Animal Fair, was to emphasize the thing that Trump was most anxious about when he presented himself the evening of the slaughter in the synagogue in Pittsburgh, was that he was actually authentically worried about his prettiness,
yeah,
as it were, and the fact that his hair is real. Who gives a damn?
And he found some time to tweet about the World Series, too.
Yeah. Really important stuff.
These are not normal times. I really can't emphasize this enough.
Well, Trump is now going to go, though he was asked not to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I mean, what the gall, the chutzpah, to use the Yiddish word, is unbelievable.
Yeah, I want to mention something else regarding the synagogue massacre. Yesterday, Vice President Pence in Michigan... he held a rally for a couple of Republican congressional candidates. But he also held a benediction and a prayer of mourning for the victims of the massacre in Pittsburgh. And he brought out a rabbi to lead that benediction.
Oh, he found a tame rabbi.
He did, but it goes a little deeper than that. He did not bring out a rabbi that would be recognized by any a group of American Judaism as a legitimate rabbi. This was a rabbi from a movement known as Messianic Judaism.
Jews for Jesus. Yeah, Jews for Jesus.
Right. Now, let's put this in context. For thousands of years, Jews have been persecuted and killed and hounded out of countries for failing to acknowledge, in the eyes of Christians, that Christianity is the legitimate successor to Judaism. Right?
Right.
That is the heart of anti-Semitism. That and some biblical passages which claim that it was the Jews who offered up Jesus to be crucified by the Romans. This has been going on literally for thousands of years. So when the largest act of anti-Semitic violence in the history of the United States, takes place, who does the vice president bring out? A rabbi who has essentially refuted all of that.
Yeah, the whole Jews for Jesus movement has been, to me, an abomination. And it's grown. It's grown since the 60s.
Indeed. And from what I understand, in established Jewish circles in the United States, the Jews for Jesus, their presence and their ideology are seen as deeply insulting.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So that's who the vice president of the United States brings forth.
Well, Pence is, He's such a creepy man that he cannot be alone in a room with a woman other than his wife, because he'll go crazy.
Well, he's just that sexy.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Sean, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's a different Sean.
Okay. What's on your mind?
Along the lines of what you were just talking about, the co-host of Democracy Now!, Juan Gonzalez, had an excellent book called Harvest of Empire, which... anyone who wants to understand the caravan, I think they should really read that book. And wasn't it Manuel Zelaya who was overthrown in Honduras by Bush number two?
I don't remember the name, but yeah, Bush number two was the guy who threw out the legitimate government.
Right, a democratically elected government. But the reason I was calling this morning, a 97-year-old Holocaust survivor was just murdered by a Nazi on American soil, and... the horror of that, in my opinion, the blame has to be put at the foot of the new Democrats, the corporate Democrats. And let me explain that for a second, because I was a young man. I grew up lower middle class in the suburbs of Chicago, and I would have discussions. You know, I studied political science in community college. I read Kevin Phillips' book, The Politics of Rich and Poor. Uh-huh. And in that book, he predicted there was going to be this massive upsurge in union organizing and Democratic victories because of the legacy of the Reagan administration. And so I would have these dialogues with neighbors and friends and so on and so forth, and I would tell them, oh man, the labor unions are coming back. You know, they're going to just, the Republicans are just going to be trounced. And then Bill Clinton becomes president and literally throws labor unions under the bus. He throws poor people under the bus. And then Barack Obama was talking about card check, and he again throws labor unions under the bus, throws poor people under the bus. So what do you think that made people like me look like in my discussions, in my dialogues with friends and neighbors, when I was talking about how unions are coming back and we're going to have this massive upsurge in like social democracy? And instead, we're made to look like idiots as our own so-called allies proceed to throw us under the bus and defang the labor union movement.
Well, I think it's important to understand that we're not going to solve problems by having a Democratic political party dominate.
No, we need a labor movement.
Let me finish. We do need a labor movement. We do need to restore an understanding of class struggle. All of this is necessary. But wait. Now listen. This is important.
My main point, though, and my main point is this. The social fallout, the cultural, social, economic fallout of throwing labor unions under the bus is people have nowhere to turn. Poor and working class people have nowhere to turn. And then they start grasping at straws like Alex Jones and these Nazis and these KKK freaks. So I just don't, what did they think was going to happen when they threw poor people and labor unions under the bus? So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I think it's really important to understand what happened historically. First of all, organized labor in the time of the Roosevelt administration, during the Great Depression, became very powerful. The transition from AFL type unions, which were based on a specific craft, to CIO, based on this specific business or industrial power, for example, the United Auto Workers and so on. This was a big change, and it had an enormous impact both politically and socially, and in terms of power relations. In the 1940s, as the anti-communist movement ramped up in the United States, there was a very completely powerful effort to discredit CIO-type unions and to force unions to be avowedly anti-communist in the sense of not being social reformers. That worked. Organized labor from then on began to lose membership, began to lose power, began to be considered an outlier. And that was not an accident. That was really if there's such a thing as a conspiracy by the right, that was part of that. And it worked all too well. And the Democrats, unfortunately, participated in that. And this is important. We are not going to solve all our problems by having an election which puts the Democrats in power. What we will do, and this is more important right now than ever, we will stop this incredible movement toward hardcore fascism. And that's where I'm at this time. I'm not looking toward a social revolution. I'm looking toward blocking the worst possible totalitarian outcome.
The house is on fire.
Yeah.
Got to put out the fire.
First put out the fire, then rebuild the house.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Now that we've constructed a tidy metaphor, our work here is done.
Okay, well, we'll see you later. What? No.
Let's go to the phones. Rabba, good morning.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes,
indeed.
Excellent. So you said that if I disagreed with you that we're moving towards fascism, to call into your show. So can I make
I did say that, yes. Go ahead.
A comment?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I really like your show and appreciate you.
Thanks.
giving me an opportunity to rebut what you're saying. Very quickly, you know, when Joseph Putin murdered Boris Nemtsov in front of the Kremlin wall, you know, he had to he had enough class to, you know, to feign and try to distance himself from that murder. And back then, which wasn't that long ago, you know, that seemed like such a horror, you know,
I'm sorry, I don't know what murder you're referring to exactly. There's so much murder. Can you be specific?
Yeah, his political opponent, Boris Nemtsov. All right, so I thought that was an outrage. But, you know, when I see Dictator Dump going to Pittsburgh after they begged him, everybody, including the mayor, begged him to please at least stay away until after the funeral, and he has the audacity to go there for a political stump to preach more hate like he's doing right now, where he's talking about American children born here in this country taking away their citizenship and basically leaving them countryless. To say that on the same day when they're doing the first funeral for this horror, I've never seen anything like that. I couldn't believe that something like that would ever happen in my country, the United States of America, a country that was founded on the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution of the United States. I never thought I would see hate messages, illegal incendiary hate speech being blurted out 24/7 out of the White House. Nazis marching in the streets of Vancouver and Portland every week, closing down colleges, closing down streets. These guys are, I've seen them with their backpacks. They're heavily armed. They're there to cripple people for life, to kill people, mass murders, atrocities, crimes against humanity. I've never seen anything like this. Putin, Duterte, MBS, Assad, Trump. These are the people who are running the world now. What's happened to our democracy? What's happened to the United States of America? I keep hearing the colonel. The dying colonel in that movie, The Apocalypse Now, for those who've seen that movie, The Apocalypse Now movie, saying the horror at the end of the movie, at the end of the Vietnam nightmare, the horror. All I can see, the outrage and the horror. And in conclusion, I disagree again that we're moving towards fascism. Talk about fascism right now. Adolf Hitler is turning over in his grave.
I'm going to have to let you go. I'm not following the argument here at all. One of the things that I think is important to remember, however, is that Germany was regarded as the most advanced industrial state in Europe, recovering from its terrible defeat and depression after World War I, and it turned into what it turned into. It turned into a dictatorship led by Nazis who were building their whole theory on the notion of racial politics, particularly politics against people of the Jewish faith. I mean, this is not something new in history. It was hard to recognize it then. It's still hard to recognize it. But this is real. And there is no necessary limit to it, particularly in a quasi-democratic state, which is what the United States is. So it's all very real, and it's all very understandable under certain theoretical models. But we have to be organized to begin the process of folding back, rolling back this process. You don't begin with a cry for revolution. You begin with a cry for real reforms within the established order, and that's what I think. And I think that right now, everyone, everywhere, needs to call everyone they know and get them to vote. There's no question about how to vote, and I'm going to say it. I know we're not allowed, but I'm going to say it. You've got to vote Democratic now. It's not time to say, oh, no, I'm going to go with the people's party, you know.
Put out the fire first.
Put out the fire, then build
the
house.
And if you have a few extra dollars burning a hole in your pocket, you put those to use. This is the internet age now. You can support candidacies all over the country.
Yeah. Apparently, you can get away with almost anything on the internet.
Apparently, you can say just about anything you want. Let's go to the phones. Sunny.
Good morning. Good morning. Gee, what I would like to say is when we're talking about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, we got to remember that people came over here from Europe, half of my ancestry, and they found people that were free under a system of governance amongst many Indian nations. That's where the Bill of Rights came from. And American Indians have been eradicated in different ways across the generations to where we are now 1% of the population. And Adolf Hitler, when he wanted to take away the Jews from Germany. He studied the methodology of American genocide upon Indians, and that's where the concentration camp roundup system came from. It's an actual fact. The other thing that we have to remember is many American cities are under the onslaught of horrible, vicious gang organized criminal crime that particularly hits women and children hard. The men that act out in the gangs end up in prison, and they still have their social lives, and they have their food, and their roof over their heads, and some little safety. There's a guard outside the cell, but the women and children in the neighborhoods are going through hell, and they have nothing, and they die, and they disappear. And we've been under levels of that here in this neighborhood. And the thing about it is if you go to YouTube, you can see Kanye West, who's now in the Trump administration.
Well, he's cuckoo, you know.
Singing his song of homage to gang violence on women called Monster, where women are hanging from nooses around his chair. And we have to call out, look at how comfortable we are with this. Oh, he's cuckoo. He's just made another video, and the women are being all noosed. Well, I'm just saying, look at these people that are fleeing up here to America, and I definitely believe in asylum. I see these parents with little children, and I see how tired and weary they are because they're fleeing gang violence. And we are now facing it in America, coming to those levels. The point of it all is that Trump is the deal maker, and he may well try to carve up this country into some sectors go to the white supremacists, some sectors go to organized gang alliances. Look at poor Chicago. Kanye West is supposed to be the help for Chicago, and that's what I think we have to be aware of, and we have to call out the junk and the trash in all of its corners. And to say that people, and I'm American Indian, I'm not a Christian, I respect Jesus and I respect Buddha and I respect medicine people from many different cultures and traditions, but let's not forget the nine worshipers who were gunned down in South Carolina. Let's not forget the churches that have been burned. Let's not forget the 22 that were shot in the Christian church, I think, in Texas. There's just war on many levels, bad medicine on many levels, and I think it was very insensitive of Trump to call forth a Jew for Jesus to work on the situation or to memorialize the terrible thing that has happened in Pittsburgh. But let us not call people that want to walk a different medicine path an abomination this, an abomination that. Let people have their paths. Let them have their faith, just as long as they don't harm one another. And try to use just as harsh a language towards the gang construct on this country, which could take everything from us in a flash, especially when you look at invisibility gear, which is now on YouTube, about how they can make themselves invisible, and this has gotten out into something of the organized criminal gang construct.
Well, first of all,
I'm sick of the crime, and I'm sick of the gangs, and I'm sick of men that are attacking and preying upon women up and down the neighborhoods of America. You try to live through that hell. It's horrible. And when you look at Kanye West, and nobody has called out that monster video, why? Because we're so afraid now? Yeah, perhaps so, but you better get a gun, better get a dog, and you better get ready, because what happened to these other countries, Honduras and et cetera, is in process on this country.
Okay, I think I'm going to interrupt you here. It's not that I disagree with you, but I think I want to make a point that I perhaps made earlier. The gang, the specific gang that is so terrorizing Central America, originated in Southern California among immigrants from El Salvador who were kicked out of the country and then began to practice their horrors in Central America. This is a product of American culture. It is not a product of the cultures of Central America. It's really important to understand that the problem that is bringing these huge numbers of refugees here originated here in the United States. And in fact, it's our lack of historic understanding that allows us to make mistakes about what's going on.
All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, alternative radio, socialist organizer Haley Pessin speaks on the radical legacy of Fannie Lou Hamer. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on stage at Studio D, May presents three stories from the We Can Listen series, Spotlight on Equity. At 11:30, Art Focus presents a piece of the Afrofuturist movement with a look at the upcoming performance of the Sun Ra Orchestra at the Portland Art Museum. I love Sun Ra. Are you familiar with his music?
I'm familiar with his music. I don't love Sun Ra.
That's crazy, crazy stuff.
Well, it's crazy stuff, but it ain't jazz.
No, but it's beautiful. all this and more coming up today on your community-supported radio station, KBOO. Nick writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, to say, "Hey, guys, the Honduras coup d'etat occurred in 2009 during the Obama administration. Hillary was Secretary of State." I've looked That's that true. Up, and it is true.
It is true. No. Look, I want to be clear about this. The Democrats are not the salvation that one would seek. It's so far away from social democracy at this point within the Democratic Party. But, as you say, when the house is on fire, the water can be muddy. But you got to put it on the fire. And you got to put the fire out, and you got to rebuild. And that's where we're at.
Our metaphor keeps getting more complex.
I have to say that's true.
It's true. Tony also writes into the Facebook page to say, "Abe and Joe, I would love to hear your analysis of Zone 1, East Multnomah Soil and Water District. When filling out my ballot, this one certainly seemed the most exciting thing on the ballot." Soil and water districts are important.
Yeah, they are. But I don't know nothing about it. I got to
leave
that.
It there.
All right. And I apologize for that. I'm just a small area of ignorance.
One of many.
Yeah, one of many small areas of ignorance, I should say.
Maybe they comprise collectively one large area of ignorance. I don't know.
I don't think so. Not really.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Who's next, Ray? Mitch, good morning.
Yeah, I'm very forgiving of ignorance because I'm about as ignorant as everybody else.
And, we are all ignorant.
The fact of the matter is, Joe mentioned his small area of ignorance, the small area Honduras that we were all ignorant about, not Bush, but Obama and Clinton's role in facilitating the coup that an anti-corruption reformer in Mel Zelaya and his Partito Liberal was forced to leave the country in his pajamas, and all Ms. Clinton did, just like her husband accompanied Aristide out of Haiti, is she accompanied Zelaya out of Honduras, never to return.
No, you're right.
Or his political party. Now, here's the thing. But here's the thing, Joe. Why don't we know about this? Now, I love KBOO, but many people, when KBOO doesn't have something they want to hear, turn to OPB. OPB is National Public Radio. It now plays more commercials than commercial radio. It's called underwriting, but every serious discussion has to be interrupted to let you know that Progressive Insurance is bringing you this serious discussion. And we don't talk about this. We have never had a march on OPB in the state of Oregon to demand a program like Wage Slave Week that would represent the vast majority of us who punch a clock and don't get a fair deal, while OPB can continue to carry NPR's distributed Marketplace, Planet Money, every week is This Week on Wall Street, Business Insider, Bloomberg News. They are not even apologetic for not having one program about wage slave workers. They didn't cover Honduras when Hillary was involved up to her neck in her first week as Secretary of State. In fact, nobody talked about how betrayed those of us who worked for Obama in 2008 would have felt when, during the debates among the Democrats, the one difference between Obama and Hillary, since they seem to agree on everything neoliberally economic, the one point of difference was foreign policy. Why would Obama put her in the foreign policy position in his cabinet and put all the economic people, pull them from Wall Street when he had the political capital to reform?
I think that's
so
a good...
I appreciate Joe coming out and talking about the corporatism of the Democrats, but we have to educate ourselves because our institutions are corrupt.
Okay, yeah, well, no, I think he makes some good points, but do you want
to... Yeah, I would ask you this. Yes, National Public Radio is a... it's not a perfect organization.
It's an establishment organization.
It is an established organization. Their news reporting is not perfect, and it omits many important stories. I think we can all stipulate to this. But you're asking, why have we not marched on OPB in Portland? I would submit, if you're going to criticize sections of the media for spreading disinformation or for omitting pertinent events from the discourse, I would say there's bigger fish to fry than OPB or National Public Radio.
Well, right, and Channel 2 is owned by what is the
Sinclair?
Sinclair, and they I watched one of those talking heads standing there, a woman in a humiliating situation, reading copy from Sinclair. So, you know, it's the media, as we understand it, is awfully full of nonsense and of reactionary thought. But to go after OPB, which does some good programming and a lot of not so good programming, to go after them, they're not the primary source of our troubles. They're not the leadership of our bad times. We got to go for the throat that is available and the needs slitting.
And further, a lot of good, well-meaning, progressive people turn to sources like National Public Radio as their primary source of news. Is it a perfect messenger? No, it is not. But this is the sort of thing that we really can't afford to do right now on the left. We can't afford to form a circle and start shooting at each other. If you want to reform National Public Radio, that's fine. But I suggest to you right now that there are larger priorities.
Well, and this goes to my main point. This isn't the time to talk about a social revolution of the left. It ain't going to happen now. You got to first deal with the onrushing fascism of the right. This is real. This is dangerous. This is an obvious danger. We must, all of us, stop that. And the only instrument we have realistically to stop it right now is the ballot, and we better use it.
Indeed. And I don't want this conversation to devolve into criticisms of NPR or to rehash the Honduran coup in 2009.
Or to talk about the failures of the Democratic Party, for that matter.
Agreed. Who's next? Barth, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Always good to see you. Your earlier conversation about the rise and the fall of the labor union and the rise of gangs as a outcome of that.
The two aren't necessarily related, but go ahead.
Okay, well, you admitted the part where many of the labor unions were infiltrated and dominated by organized crime in this country.
Well, I didn't admit that. I don't think I admitted that.
No, you omitted it.
Oh, I omitted it. I see.
So because of that, that was another energizing force for the destruction of labor unions and the shifting to the right of loyalty oaths and the fodder of anti-communism that became part of labor business infrastructure and was a way to control and to disable and de-energize the union movement, and then that's gone forward under Reagan and et cetera. So the push for the gang presence that Sonny was bewailing successfully and articulately began not in the 80s, but back in the 40s and 50s when the mafia came in and started boosting the union and directing their influence.
I think you're making a good point, but I want to be clear here. Organized labor per se was not dominated by organized crime. There were specific unions in specific locations. For example, the ILA, the longshoremen in the East Coast, not on the West Coast, were dominated by organized crime. There are and continue to be instances where organized crime moves into labor. That's not the prime problem. That was the excuse. The movie On the Waterfront was essentially an apologia for many people on the left turning away from the left and going with a very conservative movement. And we've seen this a lot. You wanted to work in Hollywood, you had to repudiate your left-wing thinking. And it happened to many, many people, many of them otherwise very decent folk. But they needed to work, and they went ahead and did that. But the movie On the Waterfront is about the ILA. It's not about the ILWU. It's not about a lot of organized labor. Organized labor per se is not dominated by organized crime.
I think we better leave it there.
I think so. And remember, whatever else the hell you're doing, get out there and vote, please, and call everyone you know anywhere in the world. And if you don't know them very well, if they're American citizens, tell them to vote.
Elections in 1 week. We'll talk to you then. It's Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock, and coming up next is Alternative Radio.
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
Woke up, it was a Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I heard was a song outside my window. Help me, I think I'm falling.
Hi, I'm Ed Melnick, your host for the singer-songwriter edition of the Monday Sampler. Joni Mitchell, winner of 9 Grammy Awards, is one of the most revered singer-songwriters in the last 50 years. In celebration of Joni Mitchell's 75th birthday, I've put together a special program featuring some of her known and not-so-well-known music. I hope you'll join me Monday, November 5th, from 2 to 4. Let's